I actually want to very quickly want to finish up what we were discussing last week. So we'll start on page 240, and then we're going to jump a little bit. The things that we literally ran out of time to discuss in terms of kashering, I'll just say very quickly. So in terms of kashering, other parts of the kitchen that we haven't discussed, we talked about some of the kashering utensils, but as far as surfaces and the like go, so the Shulchan Aruch says that this is source 59 on page 240. Tables and chests where food is placed throughout the year. So the minhag is to, sorry, to keep forgetting this, 242. 242?
Yeah.
242. Source 59. Now the custom is to pour boiling water on the tables and the chests because it could be that, let's say, it could be chametz steak soup or something like that that's hot, that that spills. So so the minhag is to pour boiling water. The Shabur explains that it should be done from a kli rishon, so it should be done from, let's say, a kettle that was, that you boiled the water in, shouldn't be transferred. Now, there are some who say that pouring boiling water is not necessarily sufficient, the Shabur says, because let's say you have like a hot kugel that that ends up on the table. So then the table itself becomes you need more than pouring water. So he talks about using an oven, the luban, using a hot stone and pouring water on the stone and moving the stone around. But that's
Don't you just cover it? Why do you need to kasher?
You could cover it, but some people.
It's easier to cover it than to pour water all over the place. All right.
Okay, so. You could argue that, or for some people, maybe they don't like the look of aluminum foil all over their house or whatever reason. So yes, you're right. You could cover it, but
what are the logistics of using a stone? How do you move a hot stone?
You'd have to use pliers or something that do I have it up here? Something I saw from Rabbi Chaim Schwartz. I was watching one of his videos earlier. So
where
there's a lot of
there's
a lot of like shtick like there that you can buy like prepackaged like salt water from this Ner Mitzvah company, which is a little bit sticky, but this actually looks very useful. So this is a stone and it comes with a handle, and if you take the kettle, you pour the water on top of it. So practically speaking, you don't have to worry about hurting yourself by pick up the stone and moving it around. It's easy. So you couldn't. If you're going to do that, I would say do that. But the Aruch HaShulchan says that the hot stone is not really necessary. You don't have to use a hot stone. So that's in terms of tables and counters would be the same thing. Also, obviously, it has to be whatever surfaces you're kashering has to be kasherable. So if it's
Herb, I will tell you that I used to kosher my granite counters. It did make a mess, but it was nice not to have to use all that tape and everything.
Right. Oh, sure. Yeah. No, if it's wood or something, you're not going to be able to.
No, what you can kosher? Wood could kosher. It's just it's earthenware. Anything that's limestone, granite. No, sorry. What? No, limestone. Ceramic. And ceramic, limestone, those kinds of materials would be problematic. And then the last thing, they don't even bring any heat resources, but sinks, in theory, need to be koshered because there could be hot chametz that gets washed in it. So that also, you can pour boiling hot water. Rabbi Eider talks about using a hot stone as well for that, but again, that might not be entirely necessary, and if that becomes logistically too difficult, then it's probably what to rely on to do that. So of course, with the sink, and this goes with the tables and counters as well, you have to make sure it's clean for 24 hours before you begin this process. By the way, one thing I want to correct also from last week, I had said that when you're kashering, let's say you're kashering utensils, and you put them in a pot. So we're talking about which pot do you use? Use a chametzik pot or do you use the kosher Pesach pot? So apparently the minhag is to use the kosher Pesach pot to kosher utensils, although even that should not be used for 24 hours. But if need be, one could use a chametzik pot, but you can't use a chametzik pot for 24 hours before you kosher the Pesach stuff. Okay. With that said, let's go to page 358. I believe it's in yours.
Wait. I'm sorry. For koshering the sink, I can use the regular tea kettle?
Yeah, use a regular tea kettle. That's what
was, right. Yeah. Not Pesach, the tea kettle.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. I mean, with tea kettles, for the most part, you're not, you know, it's not really coming in contact with chametz. I do use a different urn. I use a different urn for Pesach because sometimes we put the challah on top of the urn. But you don't put the kettle I use to make tea during the week never comes in contact with chametz in any capacity.
Okay.
Thank you.
Page 243, the very last note in the highlighted section, it says one may simply cover the counter.
Again, fine. Yeah, if you want to cover the counter, fine. But we're trying to cover all our bases here and explore.
No, that's correct. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Okay. So page 358. So
I'm sorry, Rabbi Bill. When you said you're koshering the sink, is it okay? So I, my wine wandered. Can you use chametz stick? Because I have like four pots going when I kosher my sinks. So can they be a hum? I'd already always used like my chametz stick pots because
meaning
the water.
You boil a pot of water on the stove and then you pour it into the sink?
Right.
So if you do that, I wouldn't use the pot for 24 hours before you
do
it.
Okay.
And I would think that using a tea kettle is easiest, and the advantage of also the tea kettle has heating elements like in the a lot of them have like a heating element in the kettle, so that makes it a little bit better. It's even when you take it off, but and use all the resources that you have. Okay, so there's a particular issue here that deals specifically with Hilchos Pesach. The first number of sources deal with when do we start learning Hilchos Pesach and the concept of Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag. I'm going to skip that because we're almost before Pesach at this point, and just for the sake of time and efficiency. But you can explore the first eight sources on your own if you wish. Let's start talking about Bedikas Chametz. So we're going to begin by understanding why we need to do Bedikas Chametz, which may seem like a ridiculous question. Of course, if you need to not have Chametz, then you need to check for it. But let's explore. So the Mishnah in Source 9, this is the first Mishnah on Psachim. It says, Or la arba'a asar, on the evening of the 14th, bot kens ha-chametz or ha-ner. We check Chametz with a candle. Kol makom she'en machnisin bo Chametz, in tzarech bedika. Any place where you do not bring in Chametz, you don't need to do bedika. So that's so two principles. Number one, doing it at night and doing it with a candle. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then, but also important foundation: you only check areas that that you bring in chametz. So, and my students were ready to take this to the most ridiculous degree of where you could bring in chametz. But we know that there are certain when I just like looking in the shul right now when I'm checking chametz. When we check for chametz, next Tuesday night, I'm not climbing on top of the Aron Kodesh to in the base medrash to check for chametz because nobody's eating up there, and so you have to be logical in that sense.
What page are you on? I'm sorry,
358. Yeah.
Oh, in the back. Okay.
Yeah, we're in the back. So why do we have to check for chametz? So Rashi explains that this prevents us from transgressing the prohibitions of Bal Yera'a, of not being able to see the chametz, and Bal Yematze, for the chametz not to be found. Right, the chametz shouldn't be seen or found in our vicinity. So that's why we check for chametz to make sure we don't violate those prohibitions. Okay, seems logical enough. Tosfos say, however, that this doesn't entirely make sense because We do bittul. We say a formula to nullify, negate, dispossess our chametz. So in that case, even if you have chametz, once you've done the bittul, so it's not you don't really violate bal yirai bal yematzeh. But Tosfos explained that chazal on page 359. So what might happen? A person, because let's say a person only did bitzel, but there's still chametz around, and they didn't check carefully. They don't know. So then they find a nice piece of challah, and either out of a lapse of awareness, or just because they they have a taifa for chametz, they might accidentally eat the chametz. So, or purposely the chametz. So,
Rabbi, you know what's a very good example? The chametz sticker matzah and the pesach sticker matzah. You have to get rid of the chametz sticker matzah. If you leave it there, you might think it's pesach because it looks the same.
There's chametz sticker matzah. What is that?
Yeah, what kind of matzah is chametz stick?
The one we use a whole year, not for Passover use.
Oh, I don't know. Well, I don't buy anything.
Well, if it's matzah shira, then it's not chametz. But
all right.
But fine, but so these are two. Rashi says because we want to prevent the prohibition of having chametz in our possession. Tosfos says that we check for chametz because even really we wouldn't transgress having chametz in our possession anyway. But if you see it, you might accidentally eat it. So the Ran sort of defends Rashi and explains his rationale that yes, it's true that really. From the Torah, one of these is sufficient, right? I can either do bedika or I can do bittul. I'm going to continue to use these words bedika or bittul, so let me just define them now, but stop me if you need me to remind you. A bedika, again, is checking for chametz. Bittul is what we call nullifying or negating or dispossessing chametz. I don't know which word I like better. So from the Torah, it's really enough to do one of them. So I only have to do bedika, or I only have to do bittul. Ran goes on to say that the Torah does tell us tashbitu. The Torah tells us to destroy our chametz. So, but even then, that could be done either through bittul, or that could be done through finding the chametz and destroying it. But it's also possible, says the Ran, that who says I'm doing bittul? Maybe I'm specifically choosing to do bedika and not bittul. So that's the problem with Tosfos. Is Tosfos is assuming that everyone's doing bittul, but in theory, on the Doraisa level, it's enough to do one of them. So maybe I'm choosing to do. So maybe I'm choosing to destroy my chametz. In which case, you definitely have to do bedika. But the Ran
don't
goes
you
on
have
to say,
don't you have to do bittul to cover that? A person can't do 100% bedika. Some stuff will be missed, and you do the bittul.
Okay. No. Good. So that is certainly a concern. And the Ran goes on to say in the bold in source 12, El b'mnesha bittul zeh talib machshavatam shel bnei adam. When you nullify your chametz, that depends on the thought process of a person. Then the Iltehan Shavo, not everyone's thinking the same thing. The Efshar Sheakelu Bekach Lalo Yotziyuhu Milibam Lagamre. Maybe I really, when I say that the chametz by possession is not mine, maybe I really don't mean that. And maybe there's a part of me that really still wants that chametz and I want to be able to have it on Pesach, after Pesach, whatever. So Rauch Chachamim Lahachmir Shalo Yaspik Bittul. So Chachamim ensured that you don't just do Bittul. Zichu Bedika Uvir. So you have to check and destroy the chametz. Shu must be gamken min haTorah. Obim leshechashu sheim yishanu betoch beit hoyavo leochlo. So basically, the Ran is saying is that you really you need both. On the one hand, bittul helps a little bit if I miss something. So then bittul helps ensure that even if I do find something, that I'm not really violating the Torah prohibition of possessing the chametz. But at the same time, there are concerns that the bittul is not necessarily sufficient. If a person doesn't really mean it, or maybe they'll find something, as Tosfos said. So therefore, I need to do both bedika and bittul. Okay. Let's suffice with that for now, and let's go to page 362. So when do we have to check for chametz? So the Mishnah told us, or le'arba'a asar. So it's a little bit of a strange language because or often means light. I believe there are particular linguistic reasons why that's used. But
it's an entire page to the argument of is it light or is it night or is it day?
Correct. So in source 14 on page 362, the Gemara says, "V'ashamar of Nachman bar Yitzchak v'shash b'nei Adam mitzuyim bevatehem ve'or haner yafel v'dika." When do we have to check for chamet? When people are home, and when you can use the light of the candle. So with that said, the Ravid in the Sefer Kasuv Sham, he says the reason why. Hatam baru shekol mekomos shehu tzarich lehakdim letchilas halayla kikom bedikas achametz masin masuos tane or b'mnish adan yesham or hayom ve'ino choshech. So why does the Mishnah say that or la arbasar? Because we do bedikas chametz towards the end of daylight. So meaning it has to be at the beginning of the night when it's just getting dark and maybe there's still a tinge of light outside. So basically, according to the Ravid's approach, the proper time for checking chametz when the Mishnah says or l'arbasar really means right at the end of daytime, the beginning of night. What I'll say is interesting is that from a certain perspective, there's different times that we use for Tzeis HaKochavim. If you go on myizmanim.com and you look at all the zmanim, there's all the different times that come up. The time we use for Shabbos is often the time that we call Tzeis HaKochavim. But in fact, there are earlier times for Tzeis HaKochavim. Rav Schechter says that you can fulfill the obligation for Shema and Sfiras HaOmer even earlier than the time that Shabbos ends. So it could be that that's actually better to check chametz with an earlier Tzeis time to fulfill this idea that if you use, let's say, if you check chametz when it's at the beginning when it's completely dark, so then it's not at that point there's no light. That's not or arbasar as Ravid says. But if you, let's say, next week, if you do it at 7, if you do it at 7:43 versus 7:56, at 7:43 there might, it's dark, but there might still be like a little bit of light outside. So maybe it's preferable to use an earlier chase time based on
all this. All this assumes that it's in the house where you're doing it, not in the street where there's daylight, no daylight. It matters how your windows are.
Okay, so you have windows. So Shulchan Aruch says, "V'tchilas lel yeda b'nisan bodkim sachametz l'or haner." At the beginning of the 14th of Nisan, we check for chametz with a candle, and we check in everywhere where there might be chametz. And again, the Mishnah Berurah codifies this idea of the Ravid that we do it right at Tzeis HaKochavim when there's still like a little bit of daylight left. Now he says the reason for that is in order that a person not forget to do it later. But the Ravid gets this idea from reading into the name of the language of the Mishnah. So, given that there's a very specific time for checking chametz, and this makes it a little bit different than other mitzvahs of the night, where like with Shema, so you can really say Shema b'chachil until chatzos, and b'diyeva you can say it the whole night. So maybe there's not the same kind of rush, but with bedikas chametz, there really is an idea of doing it right at the beginning of the night. So Gemara in Psachim, source 18, on page 363, quotes the name of Abaye, that Aitzur ba Merabanan lo fatech beidane beorta de tresar de nehege arbesar. Person should not begin learning Torah at the end of the 13th of Nisan, going to the 14th of Nisan, because maybe he'll dilma mashkale shmaite. He's going to get engrossed in what he's learning, vate limnue mitzvah, and he'll forget the mitzvah of searching for chametz. So Abaye brings up the issue that learning Torah right before the time for Bedikas Chametz might prevent one from doing a Bedikas Chametz, or a person might forget about it, so you can't learn. Now the Mishnah, sorry, Gemara in Brachos, source 19, does mention that in theory a person comes home from the field and you know, and they might learn a little bit, and then they say Kriya Shema and they daven. So again, the explanation for that might be that with Shema, you have a little bit more time to say it, and it's something you do on a regular basis. Those are explanations from the Bach and the Taz. But otherwise, when it comes to Bedikas Chametz, so there is more of a concern that you'll forget about it, and maybe the mitzvah really is to do it at the beginning of the night, so you shouldn't do anything. So Shulchan Aruch says,
The Bedikas Chametz mitzvah is not one where you're occupied with one mitzvah, so you're exempt from another mitzvah. You're occupied with learning.
Those are two separate questions, really. Like, one is, can you begin to do a mitzvah when the time for Bedikas Chametz is, thereby delaying, you know, your Bedikas Chametz? So, you know, there you could. So you can't rely on Osek mitzvah Pater Min mitzvah in that scenario. But right. It could be that if you're already in the middle of a mitzvah, so do I have to stop that mitzvah in order to do Bedikas Chametz? So that's coming up. So Shulchan Aruch says that a person should not begin to do any malacha, shouldn't eat until they check for chametz. Mm-hmm. And even if they have a set time for learning, they shouldn't learn until they check. So Mishnah Berurah explains that, and this is true really of Chanukah, or Kriya Shema, Sfiras HaOmer, that when you have a mitzvah right at the beginning of the night, we're really not supposed to eat within a half hour of doing that mitzvah, in case we get engrossed and forget about it. So Mishnah Berurah says that. So the poskim also go through the issue of learning. When is it permitted? When is it not permitted? So I don't want to get bogged down in the issue of learning. There's a possibility that if you're learning on your own, there's more of a concern that you'll forget unless you have someone to remind you. But the Shulchan Aruch and Ramah disagree about whether or not you have to stop. The Ramah says you do have to stop. But the Magen Avraham brings an interesting possibility that let's say there's a shiur in shul. So if there's a shiur, let's say this is actually a perfect example. Let's say I gave my shiur next week. I'm not going to because it's the night before Pesach and people are busy. I'm busy. You're busy. But if we start my shiur at 7:45, 7:50 next week, we're running right into the time for Bedikas Chametz. So is that a problem? So in theory, we could argue that because it's also usually back in the day when you went to a shiur, you were like at shul for the shiur. You weren't at home for the shiur, right? That makes a big difference. So Magen Avraham argues that everyone's going to go home after the shiur, and then you're going to do Bedikah right away. But the Magen Avraham says that it should be like a very basic halacha shiur. But if you're doing pilpul, if you're doing a very complicated Gemara shiur and everyone's getting intellectually engrossed in what's going on, so that might totally sidetrack. And, this happens to me. Sometimes I'm supposed to do something, and, one thing after another, I get sidetracked, and you forget. So maybe it should be a very short shiur. That's what Rav Avadia Yosef says in Source 24, that that it should be, Daf Yomi shiur, Mishnayos, Bar Halacha, between Mincha Maariv, fine, but a longer, more complicated shiur should not be done. Even if it's public, even if it's at shul. Rabbi Avadia Yosef also explains, Mishnah Berurah talks about what you're allowed to eat, what you're not allowed to eat. So the basic principle is that you shouldn't start a meal. And at the same same token, if you want to have a little bit of fruit, something very basic, that's also fine. Again, when we have prohibitions of eating, it often does not apply in these kinds of contexts. Often doesn't apply to lighter snacks, but something heavier meal shouldn't be begun until one's done bedika. Mishnah Berurah adds though that a half hour before the time for checking, so then having fruit is fine. Once the time for checking actually comes, once it's Tzitzit Kol Chavim, and one should perhaps be a little bit more machmir not to eat anything at all. And finally, the responsa or letzion discusses the possibility. Let's say a person has to work, so that can they appoint their wife or somebody else to check their chametz for them? And I raise the possibility that that's fine. But if there's nobody else to check, so then you're obligated to leave work and close your store and go check your chametz.
Okay. A couple owns the chametz together in the house.
What?
What do you mean for him?
So the obligation to check chametz, I guess, is technically on the husband. But if the husband can't be home for some reason, so in theory, he can appoint somebody else in his family to do the bedika on his behalf. Then he doesn't do the bedika, can stay at work, what have you. Okay. Where do we have to do bedikas chametz? So the Mishnah Amsachim, the Mishnah had said that kol makom, any place where you don't enter chametz, you don't have to check. So the Gemara goes through all sorts of examples of places you don't have to check. But again, we can be logical for a second that if you really don't bring chametz in there, then you don't have to worry about it. That might be different if there are children, grandchildren that are running around the house. That might be a little bit different than if there aren't any children around. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch codifies, that a person has to check places. And even if there's like a slight concern that you brought chametz in there, so maybe we have to be concerned that maybe you did, a person should be careful. Question about the checking Sfarim. Do I have to check Sfarim? So the Chazon Ish famously had a chumrah that you have to check all of your Sfarim for chametz. So that's a big chumrah. Rav Avadya Yosef disagrees with it. A lot of people disagree with it. One thing that is a little bit more reasonable is that if you have Sfarim that maybe you ate with chametz and you have a good feeling that you ate with chametz, so maybe you shouldn't bring those to the table where you're eating, because then that could be a problem. So that's why a lot of people use Haggadahs for benching instead of their regular Shabbos benchers. I was listening yesterday to a shiur. Actually, it wasn't a shiur. It was a podcast Q&A. Somebody brought on Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik in Ramat Beit Shemesh. He's the son of Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. So they went through all these Pesach, very rapid-fire Pesach Q&A. So Rav Chaim says that his father, Rav Aaron, who was, for those who are familiar with the Rav, that's Rav Aaron's the Rav's brother. So Rav Chaim is the Rav's nephew.
From Chicago.
So Rav Chaim said that his father was very makpid. A month before Pesach, he couldn't bring any Sfarim to the table. No books, no Sfarim to the table. So that's a but again, you don't have to start going to check all your books. Okay, Yaakov Yosef, source 33, page 370. Yaakov Yosef talks about cars. I always get a car wash, but one has to realize that maybe it goes a little bit not just a little bit beyond just doing a car wash, but really somebody who owns a car should probably be checking their car as part of Dika's Chametz on the night of the 14th. Now, you can do this as part of the same bracha. You don't have to check multiple locations with the same bracha. So you can go from your house out to the car, do all of that in one fell swoop. But he says that you should check by lights the night of the 14th. You should check the cars. And he says the same thing, bus drivers and pilots, and the like, talking in Israel. So you have religious bus drivers and pilots. So he brings up that point. Shulchan Aruch talks about needing to check shul. That's verse 34, that you need to check the shul, the base medrash. This coming shot, Lorraine's already cleaning the shul this week, so the main shul will be chametz free the Shabbos. Mishabura says that some of the gabayim are a little bit lax. They don't really check very carefully. He says that's wrong. You should really do a full check and shul. Okay. Now in terms of So Shulchan Aruch and source
33, you could be cautious during the year on certain things, so you don't you always say don't do all this because Pesach is coming.
You could, and again, Shulchan Aruch would say that if you you know, if there's a room that you're very makpid the whole year, I never, you know, you're thinking about Pesach, I never bring chametz to that room, so you really don't have to, you don't have to do anything in there. Shulchan Aruch brings up the fact that people clean usually before before Pesach, and nonetheless, you still have to check. And in fact, Rama says that not only, you know, not only do some people clean, but you really should clean. You really should clean very carefully before the bedika, and the bedika should really just be to make sure that that there isn't too much that there isn't too much left. With that said, it should be very clean, and this is really just a sort of a last check. So with that said, in source 37 on page 372, they record, and the name, this is the there's an addition of the Mishnah Brura with insights from modern day poskim. So apparently, Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach and Rav Yashiv felt that you know, once you've cleaned very well before Pesach, so you don't have to go through everything super super carefully and inspecting every little thing. You know, so you have to check and make sure that it was cleaned well. And again, you should go in every room, you should go in every location, but you don't have to go crazy on the night of the 14th once you can assume that everything is clean. In terms of procedures, bedikas chametz, apologize, I'm rushing, we just have a few minutes left on the Zoom. So the Gemara Psachim says that that we make a bracha, it's a discussion of whether you should do al bir chametz or levayer chametz. We paskin that you say al bir chametz. So we do that, so we say al bir chametz, which means to destroy the chametz. We make the bracha before we check for chametz. Mishnah Berurah explains that even though you're not really destroying your chametz until the next day, checking chametz itself is not really the end goal of the mitzvah. It's only part of the mitzvah. It's a hechsher mitzvah. It's a part of the process. So really the process of destroying chametz begins with checking. Therefore, you make the mitzvah of al bir chametz when we check for the chametz. Of course, you know, one way we fulfill the mitzvah to destroy our chametz is through annulling, nullifying. So we do that anyway at night. Shulchan Aruch adds that once you said the bracha, you shouldn't speak about matters not related to the bedika while you're doing the checking. Something of excitement. I'm going to try to cover, I think, two last points before going, and I think we're going to be out of time. So on page 375, sources 41, 42, discussion of whether or what we use in terms of light, right? Because the mission is very clear that you have to use a candle, and it's not just because a candle was the main source of fire, but there are psukim that talk about you know, the Omer ba'esahi achapes es Yerushalayim beneros, searching Yerushalayim with candles, ner Hashem nishmas Adam chapes. So there are different references to candle and searching, that you use a candle to search. The Gemara is very clear that you can't just rely on natural light, but you have to use a candle. You shouldn't use a torch because then you're creating risks. You're not going to check carefully. So it should be a candle. With that said, Bizman Hazeh, you know, we have something called a flashlight. Some of us even have it on our phones. So can you use that? So Rav Eliezer Melamed explains that the reason why we use a candle is because it focuses the light, and it's not dangerous. And perhaps the flashlight is even stronger than the candle. So maybe there are good reasons to use a flashlight. Now, he says that there are some people who say that the Takana of Chazal is to use a candle. So that's fine. But one could use a flashlight, and maybe one should use a flashlight in places that are more difficult to check. Okay, I think I'm going to have to stop here because it's telling me there's less than 1 minute. There's so many more interesting things to talk about. Maybe if I have time tomorrow, I'll record the rest.
Does it have to be bread?
Chametz. Yeah, so that was going to be the next thing, was the bread.
Cheerios or chametz.
Yeah. I think. I think that makes sense. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Okay. So this is a post-Shear recording to continue from where we left off because the Zoom got cut off. So those who are listening online or those who wanted to finish up the sources, I'll try to do this expeditiously. So on page 376, source 43, we begin to talk about placing the pieces of bread, which I think at the end of this year there was a question about that. So we make the bracha when we search for chametz, al bir chametz. We're checking the chametz, we're making a bracha on it, and we're making a bracha that we're going to destroy. So what happens, we said that you have to, you know, really should be cleaning really well. It's halacha, not just good practice, to clean really well before the bedika. So what happens if you don't find anything, which is quite likely? So the Kolbo brings the idea that you wrap 10 pieces of bread throughout the house, and then when you find those, so that's they'll get burned the next day, and your bracha al bir chametz is not a bracha l'natala, it's not a needless blessing. So the Kolbo brings this custom to place pieces of bread to prevent a bracha levatala. So the Ramah codifies this this minhag. He says that this is the minhag to place pieces of bread throughout the house in order that you don't have a needless or a bracha in vain. But he says that if one did not place the pieces of bread, it doesn't really matter. When you make the bracha, you're making the bracha to destroy anything that would be found. But perhaps you still have some chametz left over anyway. So you don't really have to place the pieces of bread. So the Mishnah Brura brings that, yes, this is the custom, and Yari talks about, for Kabbalistic reasons, I guess, for placing 10 pieces of bread. But that says, Yesh lizayir harbe shalo yovad echad min haptitin. Be very careful you don't lose any of the pieces. So what does happen if you place 10 pieces of bread, you only find 9? So what do you do? So that's a question that the Or Lezion addressed. It says Yeshua l'chapso l'matzo, should look for it. But if you don't find it, so you'll say bitol, and that's enough. And if you happen to find that piece of chametz later, so you're not transgressing the mitzvah, since you said that any chametz I didn't find in my possession, it is worthless. It's like the dust of the earth. So if you find the chametz, so you'll just you'll get rid of it. But obviously you should try to make sure that you don't lose it. I have a friend who shall remain nameless, who last year ran into that exact situation, and his father-in-law found a piece of bread on Chol HaMoed. So okay, so it was destroyed. Not the over on Pesach, but I should be extra careful. It happens to be, I think this is the first year I've seen this, that the Ner Mitzvah organization, so it used to be that they gave you like the feather and the spoon in a package, and at some point I think they were providing the bread also, and now they have the bread prepackaged with numbers on it. So you know you have 10 pieces, and you know that if you only find 9, then you know, you're missing something. Okay, a bitul chametz, right? Nullifying, dispossessing the chametz. So the Gemara talks about that after you check, habodek tzarich sheivato. After you search for the chametz, you have to render it void. So the Gemara asks, you know, why? It's just crumbs. And Rava says, well, maybe you'll find. Why should you need to do bittul? So Rava says, well, maybe you'll find a roll. Actually happened once at so my wife's Shabbos Kala was a little over a month before, or it was right about a month before Pesach, and a number of years ago, and so there are people staying in her house, including one with a child. So on Pesach there was a challah roll found under the couch that presumably was from the child. Okay, so you might find a piece of, you know, nice challah roll, and you'll want to eat it. then maybe you'll forget. So the Gemara says, well, why don't you just be mevatel it when you find it in that circumstance? The Gemara says, well, maybe it's too late. It's one thing if you find it on Erev Pesach. It's another thing if you find it on Pesach itself. Now, Pesach itself, you can't find it. You can't annul it. So there are two reasons why or two things that Bittul can accomplish according to Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says that the purpose of Bittul is Vashbata Delev Hi Ashbata, that you're deciding that it's worthless, that it means absolutely nothing to me. I have no relationship with it. Tosfos says that it's a matter of Hefker that's considered ownerless. Now, something that's ownerless is something that's still sort of present. It's not, according to Rashi, it's kind of like it's like as if it's destroyed and it's like the dust of the earth. It's like more like that concept. With Tosfos, something that's Hefker is not totally meaningless. It just means that you don't own it. But in theory, Hefker can be reacquired. So those are some different ways of looking at it. So Shulchan Aruch tells us that after you check for chametz, so you have to be mevatel, you have to nullify the chametz immediately. And he says that we do it a second time after we burn the chametz before the fifth hour expires, that we do bittul again. So Rama says, "Ve'en levatel bayom el lachar shesarav hachametz." On the day itself, you should wait till after you burn the chametz, so that when you burn the chametz, it's your own chametz. So, the question, of course, that's begged here is why do we do bittul both at night and during the day? So, Panini Halacha explains that at night, what we're being mevatel is the chametz that I looked for and didn't find. So that I'm already detaching from. During the day, what we're nullifying is any chametz that I had, through the morning, and anything that's remaining that wasn't destroyed. So there's a purpose to both of them, right? When we're doing bedika, so we're trying to find anything, and anything we didn't find, we're being mevatel in terms of destroying. So that's the focus of the bittul there. Okay, and Mishnah Berurah explains that this was similar to what the Ran had said before, but Mishnah Berurah explains that from the Torah, it should be enough to either find and destroy your chametz, or it should be enough to be mevatel it. But the concern, if you're only mevatel the chametz, so maybe you'll find it and you'll forget that it's a Pesach, you might accidentally eat it, or you might not have really fully detached from it, so maybe it wasn't a full bittul. On the other hand, if I only destroy the chametz, so... If I only destroy the chametz, and then if I find something, so then I have a problem because I still have chametz in my possession. So we do both as sort of checks and balances to make sure that there's no issue. Okay, so we have Bir Chametz, page 381, source 54. So Rabbi Yehuda says that bir chametz is done by burning the chametz. The chachamim say you can even crumble it and throw it into the air, throw it into the sea. So Shulchan Aruch records that both of those are fine in source 55. But the Ramah says that the minhag is to burn it. That's generally what we do. Of course, with that said, we don't literally burn all the chametz that we've accumulated from the whole year. But as we're cleaning, we throw things out and. On the morning of, it's really just what we did from Bedika that we burn, and that's enough to fulfill the minhag, and everything else should be thrown out. In some neighborhoods, they collect the garbage they collect the garbage on Pesach morning, so you don't have a problem if you throw out chametz. For those of us who live in apartment buildings, when we throw down the chutes, at that point really is a hefker. We have no relationship with that anymore. So that's not a problem. But let's just say if the trash isn't really being collected and it's still on your property, so the advice there is to pour bleach on the chametz, so therefore it's inedible. And then you've also accomplished biur that way. You've destroyed your chametz that way. with the chametz that you're throwing out. Okay, if one finds chametz on Pesach, the Gemara says that if it's on Yantif, kofel lav esakli. The source 58 on page 382, kofel lav esakli. So chametz is mukta. Mukta means is something that I'm not allowed to pick up. I'm not allowed to carry. So if I don't have any use for the object, so it's considered to be mukta. So therefore, anything that's usser is also, you know, in general, is considered to be mukta. Right? Cheeseburger is mukta on Shabbos and Yom Tov because I'm not allowed to eat it. So therefore, it's no use. It's mukta. Likewise, chametz on Pesach is mukta. So I can't really do anything with it. I certainly can't destroy it. So you put a little, you put a vessel, you put a pot over it, just to make sure that you know, it's protected. You leave it there, and then you're not going to move it. And again, you're not really transgressing Bal Yireh and Bal Yamatzeh because you are mevatel it. But we just want to make sure that nobody accidentally eats it. So that's why we put a kli on top of it. Then Shulchan Aruch mentions in source 60 that on Chol HaMoed you would destroy this chametz. But again, if it's Yom Tov, then you put a vessel over it until Yom Tov is over. Shevet HaLevi suggests that somebody who does mechiras chametz, somebody sells their chametz, so maybe they really shouldn't destroy it. But one should just create a separation, put it in another location, because it's not really yours. It belongs to the non-Jew. So I would think that in that case, so you know, on the one hand, we say, you know, it's good to do a sale because then if you find something, it's really covered. Or maybe you can say that, no, it's, you know, chametz that you don't really know about is not included in the sale. And, you know, like a piece of bread is not, you know, lying around is not really included in the sale. So as it is, by doing bittul, you don't transgress anything anyway. So maybe you should destroy it in that case. And likewise, the Beir Halacha says that even public property, again, if the idea of hefker is that something that's ownerless. So if I pick it up, so I acquire it. So Beir Halacha says you find chametz in public, so you shouldn't pick it up because then you're acquiring ownership, and that would be a problem. Okay, so that is the laws of Bedika, Bittul, and Beir Chametz. Wishing everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach.